podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield wrap after what was a phenomenally good game of football, albeit one in which Liverpool did not perform all the way through. I am talking about Manchester City 2, Liverpool 2. Download the app if you haven't done so already for lots of fantastic Anfield wrap bits and pieces all the way through what will now be a thrilling run-in full of twists and turns. Also, I'd said the other week, save the date of the 9th of July. Tickets will be on sale this week at some point for us on the 9th of July in London, playing Earth in Hackney. So we're looking forward to that massively, 9th of July. Now, normally when I mention we're doing shows somewhere, someone always says, why aren't you going to come and do shows in my place? We're working on a couple of tours across the United States and the UK. So there'll be more information on that when we have it. We are working away, me and Craig Hannon. Hackney, Earth, 9th of July. They've finally, John, found a place big enough for me to feel comfortable playing. It's called Earth. I'll do that joke on the night as well, just to be crystal clear. But that's the way in which it will work. Anyway, let's crack
for
on.
More jokes like that, and by more we mean that joke.
Again, relentlessly that joke. Anyway, Manchester City 2, Liverpool 2. And it's a cliche, Stu, but it was indeed a game of two halves. Often when you say that, what that means is one team was on top for one half and the other team was on top for the other half. In this instance, it was more that Manchester City were much the better side in the first half. And then the second half, the game was much more evenly split between the two teams and Liverpool managed to get themselves the draw.
Yeah, there wasn't like some kind of tactical overhaul at half-time or anything like that, was that it was very much, I think both teams and both managers believing in what they'd set out to do. And I think there was a recognition by our manager and by our players that we just hadn't done it very well. We hadn't imposed our will on the game enough in the first half. And more than anything, it was a case of in that second half trying to be more of that, showing some resilience, some perseverance, and trying to be braver and trying to find a way to stay in the fight, not just in the game, but to stay in the fight in the season, to make make them earn it, keep them honest, make them earn it, and find a way to keep that going, because you know within the first half, you know it was looking a little bit precarious.
It was looking precarious, Amelia. But the flip side is when you watch your match of the day or you rewatch the game, the keeper makes a great save from Sterling, but they've got the ball in the back of the net 30 seconds later from the way in which that play breaks down. They weren't creating chance after chance. It just always felt like they're just about to create chance after chance, and we couldn't get out, and the pressure was relentless from them.
It was relentless, yeah. I think the periods in which we managed to get the ball for a little bit longer, we look brilliant and we look like we could dominate. We just never quite managed to. And I think the reason that the second half feels so different is that we come out of the block so fast, and it's our game that they have to settle into, which is the difference. I think that it took a lot of Liverpool players a long time to settle into the game, if not most of the first half. And I felt very grateful to be going into halftime 2-1 down, which I wouldn't have said at the start of it, but it felt like it was almost like we'd gotten away with it a little bit at points to be going in only 2-1 down into halftime. And I think the difference is when we managed to dominate and to set the pace, it was that we made them settle into our game. And I think it was too much the opposite of that in the first half. We just didn't seem as confident as we said before the match, that we were probably all a lot more nervous than the Liverpool players were going to be. And that didn't look like the case when they came out onto the pitch, because even Van Dijk looked rattled, and players that we've really depended on throughout the season to be the absolute spine of the team, wherever you go, whatever situation we're in, kind of when the chips are down, they're always the ones that are just faultless and relentless. It felt a little bit like they were having a bit of a wobble. Even Trent had a bit of a wobble, and that was, yeah, disconcerting.
It was disconcerting, I think, to have that little bit of a wobble, John. The one area where they don't have a wobble, and this is really interesting, you know, when you think about the two teams, because we said before, under the two best teams, I maintain that the two best teams, is the one area we don't wobble in is in front of goal. You know, and that's, we're absolutely cold-eyed, dead-eyed, cold-eyed, whatever the phrase is, in front of goal.
Whatever Stu's feeling right now.
Yeah, that's what we are in front of goal. And that, to me, is you know, it's testament to those footballers, but I think it's also the difference between these sides. If they very much have bought into the idea of as much control as they can possibly get out of games, but what that means is they haven't got a clear sort of razor threat. We're a lot of razor threat, and you get to see it over the course of the match. We get a sniff, we make it happen, and that's why Liverpool end up drawing the game 2-2, and it's why City don't run away with it.
Yeah, I think both goals, you know, you see perfect assists and perfect finishes. And I think for the first one, I underestimated in the ground both the pass from Trent, because in the ground I think he's just knocked that across, where you watch it back and he's found that pass. It's coming over from Robertson, he knows exactly what he's going to do and it's perfect. And also the Jota finish in the ground, I'm like, oh, keeper's got to save that, and maybe he should do a little bit better, but he hits it exactly where he wants to. Jota, it's hard and low, boom, and it's added to get past him, you know, before he's able to do it. You know, maybe Ederson probably, you know, looks back and thinks he maybe could have done better with it, but I think it's the right thing to do, percentage thing to do, sort of from a forward. And obviously the second one, you know, the ball from Salah is just absolutely gorgeous. You know, we know he's got that, you know, in him, the number of assists he's got this season is absolutely unreal. And Mane does everything right. And that's not to talk it down, because, you know, so often in these cases forwards don't, do you know what I mean? It's probably a similar sort of level of chance to the Sterling one, but Sterling hits the keeper's legs and Mane just goes, I know how this goes in, I just do that. And it goes in, and it's a great finish just after half time. So I think both goals, you know, we deserve a lot of credit for, both in terms of, you know, how they're made and how they're finished, because it's minimum of nonsense, minimum of fuss, but a lot of really good technique and thinking.
The question then becomes around opportunities, Amelia, you know, Guardiola's post-match comment suggests he feels as though it's an opportunity they've missed out on. He's now very much, this is the reality, we're going to have to win every game, we're up against this team. Do we feel like it's an opportunity missed for us, you know, or do we feel, having now lived through the game, you know what, we'll just take that and we all move on?
Yeah, and I think it's wrong to see it as defeatist. I said at the start I would have taken a draw, and I don't think that's a bad thing to have said when you're going to play Manchester City at the Etihad. That I would have absolutely taken a draw when we were 2-1 down. I would have taken a draw, and I just think the kind of the courage and the strength of character and the control that it took and the patience as well to be able to go, this is absolutely fine. I think although there were points where they look rattled when they come out, but they don't look rattled when we're down. They know that they're coming back from it, and I think that's a real difference in this Liverpool side to Liverpool sides that we've seen previously. But sorry, the question was about an opportunity missed, and I think that, yeah, if you were Pep, you'd be gutted. And I think that they both sound, I listened to both of their interviews afterwards again this morning, I think they both sound quite chill about it and like it's quite fine, but I think it's much more fine for us. I think if you played as well as they played in the first half and dominated as much as they did, you'd be seeing just one point from that at home as a missed opportunity. Yeah, and I also think the thing that felt different this time, obviously I wasn't there, I was just watching it on the telly, but the atmosphere there actually felt a little bit more like what we do to them when they come to us, and it's the first time I've really noticed that. Obviously it's intimidating to go there, but that's more to do with the side and the prestige of them rather than it is the fan base and the stadium and the atmosphere there. So I think that going there and it feeling a bit like, fucking hell, this is big, like everyone felt like they bought into that atmosphere, and I think that will have played a part in kind of how intimidating it felt as well and why they probably should have got a result from it.
There is a thing that you do, Stu, every now and again in football. You actually get the opportunity to look into the abyss and you pull back. I loved asking people before the game whether or not they'd take the draw, and everyone was trying to be bullish. I very much enjoyed, slightly ironically, in the pub last night, saying to everybody, you took a draw at half time then. There is something to be said, I think, about getting to stare at it and go, that's what this is, that's what this works, but it doesn't eat you. And I think that's the big deal here, is that we haven't been eaten by this. There was a universe where that happens, where we come away from it, it's 4 points, but it's also 4 points and you feel as though they've done us, to be quite honest with you. As it is, it's only 1 point and they haven't done us.
Yeah, and I've kind of gone the other way on this as well. I actually think that I think it suits us more. And I know that's really counterintuitive. I realised that, you know, there was a lot of pressure, if you like, to go there and win. I think that was the narrative that Liverpool had to do. But I think if you watch how that game plays out, I think if you look in the second half as well, even in those closing stages, don't forget, a draw should be fine for them. It keeps them on top. They are going for the win because they feel like they might need to have this win. Do you know what I mean?
I thought on about 60, a couple of things happen, and we'll get into sort of breaking it down. But there's a couple of things that happen that are a bit separate to tactical things. I think first and foremost, they're shattered on 60, and they're actually, I think physically, we dip about 80, and that's when they come back into the game. I felt from 60 to 80, they were just a bit shot. But I also thought, whilst the crowd was massive first half, I thought there was a point second half there, about 60, where you began to get the opposite of that, which you sometimes get, which is when everyone's looking at each other a bit like, don't like how this is playing out now. And I thought that began to resonate around the ground and with their players, and I think that bodes very well.
It does. It's almost like that sense of, with the amount of fixtures that both teams have got, There is just that little bit of a sense, I think, that among City players and maybe City fans, that nervousness of and maybe it's because they've still got something to lose. They've got something to lose, and you know, they haven't got that cushion that they wanted. But I think there is that little bit of nervousness of, are we really going to win all seven games? Are we, you know, I know we can do it. We've done it before. Are we really going to do it? Can we go again against this Liverpool team who we know, like in 2019, will be relentless, hunting us down? And I'll tell you what, being the prey, being the one that is hunted, it gets old. Yeah. It gets tiresome. It wears you down. And you know what? As I said before, they've got to earn this.
Senior said last night on The Pink, and it was a really good point, that I think it suits us more to be chasing, and it does, because I think if we'd won yesterday, I'd be almost more nervous than I am now of like, fucking hell, we've got to keep hold of this, and every game becomes more of a, we can't lose it, we can't fail, whereas all we need to keep doing is just keep going every single week, winning games as we know we can win. And I just think, I don't know, chasing suits Liverpool much more than it does City, so it's fine.
It's the psychology of carrying the valuable vase through the crowded room. Is the thing, because right now they have hold of the vase, and at some point if they drop it, hopefully we catch it and then we manage to carry it the rest of the way, but that's the way in which it will be. Last little thing, John, is 2,800 Liverpool supporters there yesterday, as we found out, because they reduced the allocation. They also very kindly kept us in afterwards for congestion purposes, which was just all a bit weird. But all that to one side, I felt, you and I stood together during the game, very, very high up, but genuinely fortunate to be there. It's the highest quality you'll ever see.
It is, yeah. And I think, you know, I watched the Everton-Manchester United game on Saturday, and all my nerves went away. I felt very nervous about the game Thursday and Friday, and I watched it on Saturday. I watched Everton meet Man United on Saturday, and I just thought, like, how can you be nervous tomorrow when you're going to go watch this? You could be paying to watch this, John. you know what I mean? To misquote Shankly, that's real precious, son. Yeah. It was a bit like that, and I was like, and all my nerves sort of went away, and I thought, you know, you got to go and watch, you know, one of the, I mean, it's the greatest Liverpool team I've seen. There's a lot of older fans than me sort of agree with that, who lived through the 70s, 80s, you know, still think it's the greatest Liverpool side they've seen. This Manchester City team is one of the greatest sides English football have ever had. They're going head to head at the same time. It's in both ways unfortunate to both, but also, you know, inevitable, because they probably pushed themselves to that level. And, you know, I didn't feel very well Sunday, but I was just like, you know, it was real peel yourself off your deathbed stuff and get there, because, I thought you'll regret it if you don't go to this game, you know, come the summer or whatever, or even in a few years' time, because we don't know what's going to happen to either of these sides, really. They might be broken up or kind of whatever, but they're going toe-to-toe at the moment. They went toe-to-toe Sunday, you know, they went toe-to-toe in October. It's 2-2 all draws, with some brilliant football, with some ridiculous goals, and so much talent. And yeah, it was great to watch. You know, I thought, you know, the crowd made a, you know, a big impact as well. Like Amelia said, you know, they started loud and noisy, and you know, you see things like Van Dijk putting the ball out of play, you know, for under no pressure, and like you said, Amelia, that's like, you know, we've done that to great defenders, and you're like patting yourselves on the back, aren't you? So you've got to give credit the other way as well. But I thought RM was brilliant, and the new Jürgen song's flying, and it was great when he come over at the end, you know, not in celebration, as you say, just to say like, nice one. And you know, we still go, we fight another day, and that's what Sundays ends up being about for me, is the, you know, we fight another day, and that day is, well, just Wednesday then Saturday.
There is, Stu, a couple of little phases in the game, in the first half. Let's sort of break it down a little bit. And the key question is, nerves have been mentioned, the crowd's been mentioned, but ultimately, I think, you know, you look at how they end up setting up, it's not too far away from being a 4-4-2, to be quite honest with you, in terms of literally who's where. They put Silva right next to Rodri, and the two of them sweep every single loose ball up that comes out through the game. But the point is, they didn't do that by accident. That was the City plan. You're going to be in those areas, you're going to be winning it back. And for me, they had a clear strategy for all breakdowns, including especially set pieces, which we'll come back onto, but blocking the options and blocking the lanes. I thought that they absolutely had that nailed first 15-20, apart from the weird little spell between the two goals where we got back on top. I thought they absolutely, throughout all the first half, they had that nailed down.
They did. They penned us in. You're right, they did block the lanes, but they also found their lanes as well. I thought, I mean, goes without saying, but De Bruyne was incredible. He was incredible, and he kept finding space down the sides of Fabinho, and it wasn't Fabinho's greatest game. It wasn't his greatest half, certainly. But what Kevin De Bruyne can do when he's got time in the ball, when he finds that space there, it is everything that Liverpool team do not need, because we play this high line, and the one thing the manager always talks about, isn't it, when you know we play that line, the only way you can make that work is to make sure that the opposition don't have time on the ball to pick the pass, and time again De Bruyne will find a way, and that's the level of quality that you're playing against, isn't it? You know, at some point you have to just acknowledge, no matter what, you know, how you try to mitigate it, a player of that level of quality can still find a way. So I thought the way Guardiola set up to do that and then spring the offside trap with De Bruyne playing blind side balls behind the fullback was clever. It worked. It worked to cut us open several times. But we've seen many team across the season try to spring our offside trap, and they can't because they don't have that level of quality that Manchester City possess and players like De Bruyne. So I thought that was very, very successful strategy from them. But also, and it shouldn't be unsaid really, because we're the first ones to use it at Anfield. You mentioned it before, Amelia, the crowd, the home crowd, it does make a difference. They were up for it. I was there at 2019 as well, and they were up for it then. Yeah. You know, they're the two occasions when I really think actually they've created an imposing atmosphere. I think they've learnt from us. I think that's what they're trying to do. I think they're trying to replicate that and to try and level things up for their team on the pitch by creating something similar. It's obviously a cheap knockoff, you know. I think, you know, you can't underestimate the impact of that on the game and the speed at which they start the game. They're flying into everything. You're right, Neil, they were blocking the passing lanes, they were penning us in, but they were first to every second ball as well through sheer desire, that force of will of the crowd, giving them that extra burst of energy. And also, when we get it in those situations, it makes us scramble, it makes us panic. Mm-hmm. We've seen the opposition teams suffer the same moments at Anfield that we went through there yesterday, so... it was a tough start, but I also felt that regardless of all that, the speed of their first goal and the fact that it was, quite frankly, a pot shot, really, it's a deflected pot shot, that changes the course. Because if Liverpool ride that out for 10 minutes, if Liverpool can quiet the crowd down and get a foot on the ball, survive that, then it's a different game. But they just didn't manage to do it.
I think the thing that I was struck by yesterday, and it was just an incredible game of football to watch, was just how intelligent they are. And I think it's the first time this season, well, not the first time, but the first time it's been so pronounced, that we've come up against a side that are as intelligent in their play as we are.
Yeah.
But then, and you're right, the things that normally catch other sides out, you just can't get away with them because they're just as clever as us, and because they watch what we do and they found ways to get around it because they're the best at it. And that's great because we're also the best at it, and that's why it comes away as a draw. But I think that offside trap, they do still fall into it once, and that Sterling goal isn't a goal. And when I was watching Match of the Day, they were saying, because they talk about it every single time they talk about Liverpool, but they were saying about how if it's down to just human error, you're not getting away with that, you know, if it's not VAR making the decisions. But the point is, it's not down to human error now, it is down to VAR, and it's not accidental. Do you know what I mean? I think people almost seem to talk about it in terms of we're lucky or we're somehow getting away with it with things like that, but it's a very calculated and intelligent decision that Liverpool have made to go, well, it's not humans making these decisions anymore, but it is, but as in it's lines being drawn, and we categorically know that they will fall into that trap if we continue to lay it for them.
What's interesting about that, though, is I think in part of City's intelligence is I think they play the marginal flag thing quite clearly. That he's not going to stick his flag up. And that therefore then what that means is they were almost quite happy to let play break back down, but now we've got another 40-50 yards up the pitch.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we're happy if that just goes for a throw over there, because it means that the flag then probably won't go up. And it all restarts from there. It was driving me a bit. You were next to me in the ground, John. I was firstly obsessed with yards. Listen to the review for more of that. But secondly, I was also repeatedly, these were just offside, but the line is thinking, I don't want to put the flag up, I don't want to stop the play on the off chance I'm wrong. And I think City played that really cleverly, and I think the other thing they played really cleverly then was from the restarts, from set pieces. And this is really weird, because you end up almost acting like Guardiola's Allardyce here if you're not careful, but from the set pieces and from the restarts, I thought they were absolutely brilliantly placed to win the breakdown and then to have the additional runner, which in the end is where their second goal comes from.
Yeah, I think the second goal is a set play. They've almost conceded that ball going into the box.
We're not going to win the first one, but this is what we then do.
Yeah, this is what we then do. And Jesus times his run brilliantly, doesn't he? And because I just, if that's not the plan, I don't see what Jesus is doing there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because he's a number nine, do you know what I mean? And I know Mo Salah does some funky stuff at corners and hangs back a little bit, but that's to kind of to strike, you know, the first ball coming out. It's not to get on the back of the other sort of second one. So I think it almost is a set player. It's like, look, they're really good at defending set pieces. You know, they're bigger than us. You know, one of Matip and Van Dijk are going to win this header, but... You know, but it's going to go around here, and then we'll sort of do that again. I think that was something that they've worked on, and I think, you know, that is the intelligence that Emilia was talking about, and the idea, you know, of how do we, you know, the marginal gains, you know, how do we cope with the fact that, you know, we're not going to necessarily win a lot of set pieces. Well, let's make something else happen instead. And they just are really clever, and in the ground. When we were watching it, I was getting frustrated a little bit with Liverpool that we weren't figuring it out better or quicker. But in the same way, in the same sort of, you know, on reflection, I guess, you know, there's no practice playing against a team like that. Like, who would a bit like City? There's absolutely no one. Do you know what I mean? And so, well, yeah. Well, but even we're sort of doing it in a different sort of way, really. And so, there's no sort of City light, really, of like, oh, well, Aston Villa do a bit of that, just not as well. They're such a unique football team, you know, sort of with the ball and without it, that I sort of get that. You know, they did struggle with it for sort of long periods, really, because there wasn't, oh yeah, well, we do this. And I don't think they went long quick enough, to be honest with you. I don't think we used Mane and Salah as an out ball, you know, enough, you know, early. But I get why they backed themselves at the same time. And that is what they were sort of doing, really, because they're top players and they, you know, they've got to where they are by backing themselves, really. So I think you can be overly harsh on the first half performance, I think. And look, that was me in the ground to a certain degree, because I was, you know, you're getting frustrated. You kept turning over the ball. And as you say, the territory thing, you know, was wearing us down, really. But I think we'll be in a much better position now next Saturday. I think the weak gap between these two games does Liverpool more of a favour than Man City, because I sort of feel they're showing their hand now. And don't get me wrong, it's a brilliant hand. I'd just play it again if I was them as well. Do you know what I mean? but I think we'll have learnt a lot from that game, and you know, we've almost got a week to prepare for it as well, because I don't imagine they're doing loads on Benfica. You know, because we've just played them and we've just beat them. So, you know, the obviously, you know, you need to go out there and get a result. But, you know, I'll be shocked if we're going into training today. Well, today will be recovery day, but Tuesday and going, right, Benfica's shape. Do you know what I mean? I'll be absolutely shocked. It'll be all about Saturday, and it'll be all about, okay, they did that. It was dead hard, wasn't it? It was dead hard to get through. How do we do it better?
There will be an element to that, Stu. Interestingly, I thought they really targeted Fabinho in a way that it was about stopping the ball getting to Thiago. I think they didn't want the ball at Thiago's feet, but they didn't want to have to deal with Thiago. So for me, what was interesting was I thought they put a load of pressure on Van Dijk at times, and they put a load of pressure on Fabinho. I think Van Dijk was rattled. I think Fabinho arguably has his worst half of football since Arsenal in 18-19. To be quite honest with you, like, you know, when we all came out to the Emirates that day, a bit like, whoa, what happened there? He struggles with it massively, and I don't think Thiago particularly helps him in that scenario. I don't think Henderson has a good first half at all, so he ends up, Fabinho, I think, just being a little bit marooned, often looking up with no options on and about to be harassed by one and with no obvious ball to play in. And I think that that's something which Liverpool may well have to think about, because that's something which other sides may decide is a little pathway for them as well.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there, to be honest with you. They recognise that. I think particularly when Jota plays as well, Liverpool, you mentioned there about not going as direct to Mane and Salah, but I always think that with Firmino, we've got that, we're better in that option, really, because he's an out, he can hold the ball and link the play. And when we play Jota, listen, as great as he is, you know, what a goal scorer, at the end of the day, he doesn't provide what Firmino does. And, you know, I think we then have to pass through the thirds to get up the pitch. And I think that was very much the tactical plan, and they swamped us. They made sure that couldn't happen by swamping us early with a really awesome high press, to be fair. It's one of the best presses I've seen from City against Liverpool. It was really, really good. Targeted Fabinho, as you said. Van Dijk was the most flustered I think I've ever seen him. And you can understand why they didn't want to get the ball to Thiago, because Pep absolutely adores Thiago. He was the one player that he insisted on, Bayern Munich bringing when they got him from Barcelona. And, you know, I think we can see in just in the moments where Thiago does have space, does have time on the ball, even a split second, he's capable in just the same way of De Bruyne is with that level of quality. Mm. I mean, that crossfield switch for Trent for the first goal was just, it was something else, wasn't it? It was just a thing of beauty. But, you know, if you can get him off the ball and if you can hassle up Fabinho the way where they did, then it is going to cause us problems, and we couldn't get out, and they were there to pick up the pieces relentlessly.
It'll throw up questions about Liverpool's midfield, John, in a number of senses. Some people will immediately move towards the notion of ins and outs around that because, you know, as you said before, you do what Manchester City do brilliantly in these massive games is they make you immediately look at your own players and go, okay, you know, what's happening? But the thing for me is the way they play and the nature of their football is I feel like almost everyone who plays for City, with the possible exception of basically Jesus, Sterling and Kyle Walker, is effectively a midfielder, which helps. You know, their whole focus is we midfield.
Yeah.
That's what they've done this season. They would love probably to have added the striker Kane in the summer, and you can sort of see why again. But I think if Kane plays there, or a better example is if Aguero plays there, I actually think they have less control because they have one fewer attacking midfielder sort of type on the pitch in order to retain that control. And that to me is the thing, and I think we've got to take a breath on this. Our manager, I think, does not commit to the midfielding as much as their manager does. Our outlook is not, our approach is not as midfield heavy as their approach is. We know it's important and we want to win the battle in there, but we pick forwards and we pick defenders. They, to me, are a side that, as I say, it's like 7.5 midfielders you're dealing with, so of course it feels at times as though they've got an extra man.
Yeah, and also the ones they've got are almost sort of free midfielders in one. Some of them. I don't think he'd have picked Kane, by the way, even if they'd have bought him in that game for exact reasons you're saying, but he's not got him, and so that's
it's interesting he doesn't pick Grealish, and Grealish barely influences the play or does a thing. Yeah. He spent $100 million on him.
Yeah, but someone like Bernardo Silva, for example, he's an exceptional footballer, but he's also just so smart, but he's doing about three different things on the pitch there. Like, he's supporting Rodri when he needs to, he's coming back, he's providing that, he's giving them shape, he's pressing, but also he's picking up little pockets of space when they've got the ball, and so he needs looking after, but he's a pain in the ass for you as well, and so someone like, I thought Bernardo Silva was excellent in the game, as he always seems to be against Liverpool, and I mean it's mad to think they'd sort of nearly let him go, but I mean I suppose I really know what's going on. I only really notice him, you know, what's going on when he's playing against Liverpool, and he's always very effective. But
I think he wanted to go back to go live somewhere else, basically. That was the thing. But Guardiola didn't want rid of him. Far from it.
Yeah. Well, it's all sorted now, isn't it? Which is a pain for Liverpool because I thought he was exceptional, but he's you know the best example of. You know, and they've got a few of them, don't get me wrong, but are able to do three or four different jobs on the pitch that Guardiola wants him to do, really, rather than just your standard player who's like, yeah, this is what I'm about.
Foden.
Yeah.
Foden's another, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, next off the production line for them there, you know, after David Silva's gone, Bernardo Silva's now, you know, taking that role, if you like, multifunctional, incredible levels of talent, and also Anarch. I would love him at Liverpool, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of them. You love to hate him, but you'd love to love him as well, wouldn't you? You know what I mean? He's just one of them. And Foden is going to be one of those types of players as well. And by the way, I just thought he was one of the ones I was most worried about yesterday, Foden. And actually, I felt we kept him fairly quiet. I mean,
the quietest he's been against us.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're talking about Silva, we're talking about De Bruyne, but I think it's also worth commenting on the fact that actually, in the front areas, although they had so much the ball and they were able to damage us from the midfield passing to release the front players, I actually don't think the front players were able to do an awful lot of damage against us in play. Mm.
And that is worth pointing out, and that's sort of the point for me, Amelia, and that's the conversation, is you can basically say, is this a get better midfielders conversation? Well, you'd always like to improve any level you're at, to an extent, if you can. Is it a have a different approach situation? Or is it accept we placed our chips on forwards and defenders situation? I think there's a little bit of all three, as there always is in these conversations. But, you know, for me, that is the difference. They've chosen this thing, but then you're then able to come back and go, but they didn't create a load of clear-cut opportunities. But the flip side is, with us, you feel as though when we can get the ball to those players in games of that magnitude, we are just about to create a clear-cut opportunity, because that's what our players do.
Well, it's what you said at the start about how razor-sharp Liverpool are when it does come to that. Do you know what I mean? And that's because if we've put our chips on defenders and on forwards, then that's absolutely fine by me, because it works for us when it works. And I think that's the only issue, is because of that different approach and because of the different way they've set up, it frustrates us, but it doesn't dominate us, because the point is it's kind of equally matched in the decisions that we've made there. But yeah, I think when we're talking about the kind of the selection questions that there were both before the match yesterday and then afterwards when people are picking it apart, it's not so much the midfield where you're talking about what we could have done differently, because I guess I don't know who else I would have chosen that would have made it any different for Liverpool. And similarly, I wouldn't have changed the way that we came out at all. But I think that there were a lot more choices for the front three, and I guess you could have played about a little bit with who's next to Van Dijk, basically, is the only thing that you might potentially have changed. And I wouldn't have changed it, for the record. But I just think in the midfield, I don't know what we would have done differently that would have changed things.
What does change then second half, John? I think Liverpool choose to do a bit less messing about deeper. I think the other thing that happens, and let's just be frank about this, a goal always helps. Yeah. A goal always helps. And I think that settled everyone, and it made them go, the worst thing that could have happened. Almost everything that this fella's just said to us at half time, I'm sure it was great, but it suddenly feels not, you know, he's probably talked about sustaining this performance and keeping the buffer in and looking to extend it, and suddenly this has happened. So I think that helps. But I actually think that on reflection, Salah and Mane, terrific second half. Suddenly so is Kyle Walker, don't get me wrong, but Salah and Mane are absolutely terrific second half in terms of being much more available as an outlet, getting us up the pitch. And I hate to say it, I hate to be the fella who says everything I was saying in the ground was right, but suddenly Liverpool are winning yards, and again, it's not Allardyce football this, but suddenly yards matter, and they matter to Liverpool, I think.
Yeah, 100%, because when we're in the final third, we were causing them problems. So in a really basic way, just be in the final third as much as you can. Because when we were there, you know, it was a pain for Liverpool. And, you know, on the yards thing, I couldn't believe how many times, you know, the first half where we'd get a throw in and Trent had end up taking it 20 yards deeper just to get a quick one to Van Dijk, and then Van Dijk goes back to keep it. I'm like, no, we don't want this. Not today.
In their half, take it in. It went out in their half, take it in their half.
Yeah,
stay
and
in
throw
their
it
half.
Further into yeah. their half.
Yeah.
And then see if they like it. And there's so many times we sort of weren't doing that. And I think second half, we were a bit more sort of percentage about what we were doing, really, and a bit more sort of, you know, let's get it up there and see what happens and see what problems we're able to cause for them. Because, you know, those two players that you talked about there, Salah and Mane, you can almost throw them anything and they come out with the ball or a foul or something, don't they? So let's use that. You know, we didn't have, you know, Jota hasn't got the same level of it as Firmino, as Stu says before, but you've got the other two. So let's sort of use that, really. And I think they did much more. But as you say, the goal is massive, because they were probably at half time going, are we only 2-1 up there? Or we might pay for that. And then boom, straight away they did. And so it's a bit like, you know, they've gone from probably doing their own heads in a bit at half time, you know, privately. Obviously, you know, they're not saying that. They're probably saying, oh, you know, same again, boys, and stuff like that. I'm sure there's a bit more to it than that. But here's one of my championship manager halftime team talks. Same again, lads. But you know, but what you're saying, what you think is different, isn't it, in these situations? And I think a lot of them think, are we only 2-1? We should be more. You know, they could really, you know, make us pay for that. And then they would, you know, they made us pay before you know it. And so I think that the goal is a big psychological thing. But yeah, it was a completely different half. And I think Liverpool were just a bit braver, a bit more sensible. And I think they did tire as well, like you said before.
Did you feel like Sadio, I know we said there was less messing about deeper, but did you feel like Sadio was tracking back more during the second half? I felt like he made a lot of the opportunities and a lot of the best things that happened started with Sadio much further back than I would have expected to have seen him at that point.
I think there's an element of that, but I think the other thing he's doing is he's just decided, and I don't, listen, you know, Sadio scores, I'd point that out as well, but I think, you know, the Sadio versus Kyle Walker thing, it's a draw, if you know, but it being a draw helped us massively, because in the first half at times it felt like, well, Kyle Walker can go where he wants. Second half, there's less of that. Sadio goes with him a little bit more, but also he's then very available, and Kyle Walker's suddenly thinking, hang on, I've got a problem going the other way here big time. And then Diaz, whilst I don't think Diaz does a lot when he comes on, I think the other thing he does is he keeps keeps Walker really honest, because Kyle Walker's thinking this fella's lightning and he can get away from here. And if he does, I'm in trouble. So I think that what we actually do, I think Cancelo's less influential, I think, creatively, second half, because suddenly there's more Mo Salah. So he's got to deal with this. And I'm not saying that, you know, Salah doesn't have him on toast or anything like that. He's not making a show of him. But I think that suddenly their players who were able first half to think, I've almost got the run of the pitch here. Second half are going, I've got a contest. And that to me is, that is what we do change to. It does become a contest. There's more Thiago in the game. I think he's the one of the midfield three who stands up first. I think that then the other two improve. I actually think when we take Henderson off, he's in the process of playing his best football across the course of the match. But obviously there might be a sports science reason for that, and I wasn't against seeing Keita come on. But I think you got to see Thiago improved, then you saw Fabinho improve, Henderson improves. I'll say again, Salah and Mane are offering this very specific challenge in there as well. And I think that all of that suddenly means Liverpool are 20 yards high up the pitch, both in and out of possession. There's a higher line second half, but it works. They catch Sterling offside. And that to me, you know, everything that Liverpool do, it's one step at a time. The goal helps. They take steps forward and suddenly look a better side.
Yeah, the goal definitely helps. It definitely helps. But I think as well, like we were saying at the beginning, I do think that Liverpool's, the team talk, I think largely will have revolved around imposing their will, sticking to the game plan, but actually being braver. You mentioned there they were way higher up the pitch. They were taking every opportunity to, and even, you know, you are walking a tightrope. You're not walking a tightrope. You're playing the highest quality football on a tightrope, and it's dead hard to trap a ball on a tightrope. and I think, like, you know, you are playing that high up the pitch. You are going to get exposed at times. But Liverpool are willing to take that risk for all the reasons we spoke about before, even with the quality that City have got. And ultimately, you know, when we were saying before about how much they were midfielding, and actually you were saying, Neil, about, you know, it's not really about that for us. It's we can be more of a problem. Our forwards did cause them more of a problem with less of the ball. And we only saw that increase in the second half, even though we still didn't have anything like the ball that they had overall. And I know we had a drink yesterday, so I might have made this up, but I'm pretty sure that I saw RXG was higher. RXG was higher than Manchester City.
Not by the end. Point where it was, but the Mahrez chance at the end is a hugely valuable opportunity.
Right.
So that by then.
But you're talking an injury time at that point, so over the course of the game.
And you're also talking about the fact that because Jota doesn't get a shot off when he's one-on-one, that doesn't count towards expected goals. And there's a couple of other little elements like that where Liverpool don't quite get the shot off, so it never lashes itself into the metric.
Right.
So.
But over the course of the game, when you hear that, you know, the broader narrative, obviously, is that City will be kicking themselves. They didn't win. Well, actually, do you know what? We had some pretty good chances ourselves, and we don't have to play. We don't have to judge ourselves by the same barometer as Manchester City, because we play a different way. We judge ourselves by actually what we do create in a manner that we can create it, and the way we can impose our will and control the game by pushing up and squeezing the play.
They've got themselves in a situation where, on the idea that they tire, we've seen it in the past. If you take literally the goals away on all sides, it's not a dissimilar game to the 3-0 in 17-18 at Anfield, John, where first half we do absolutely swamp them. The crowd's at our back. We're all over them. Second half, we're not hanging on for dear life. We're competitive within the game. We still carry a bit of a threat within the game, but we're not the force we were first half. In the ebbs and flows, it feels a little bit like that, but with them on top in the second half there. And that's something when you do have the crowd to your back, when you do go all in. And we've seen Liverpool sides, and 17-18 is a really good example of it. The number of times that Liverpool side, you get to 60 and you sort of have an awareness, we're shot here. We're really, really tired. And I really think that happens for them. And it's interesting because they've got us. They've just had us Sunday. They've got Atletico Madrid on Wednesday, and then they've got us again on the Saturday. And I think if they're going to approach these games like this, there's a point where that breaks you a little bit. And that's one of the other things I think from that is, I just think that, as I say, they get to 60 and they are all almost looking at each other like, where's the next? Apart from Big Kev, because he's a relentless footballing machine of brilliance. The rest of them, to me, just all look a little bit like, where's our next moment of inspiration coming from here, lads? Where's the next thing that picks us up?
Yeah, but I think they'd have been semi-aware of that.
I think so too.
You know, you gamble, don't you? Do you know what I mean? It's not, you're not like just sprinting off at the start of a marathon presuming it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're aware of, and the manager will be aware, and the players will be aware of you know, the repercussions of starting how they did, of putting so much into that game as they did. They just would have backed themselves to... to be leading in the game. And then, you know, if they're 2-0 up on 60, then you feel a bit less tired because you're winning. But also, you know, they know how to sort of see that game out. They could have frustrated us. They could have slowed it down. Whereas instead, they're needing a goal. And then you are sort of looking around and going, we thought we'd be 2-0 up here, or we thought we'd be at least a goal up, and we're not. And Liverpool are looking dangerous. And you know, they've got lads to come off the bench. And yes, so have we. But as you say, there was a couple of times where they were attacked in that moment, and it was almost like, you know, they're looking around at each other and going, who kind of sorts this really, which you never really see with Man City. But that's tiredness of mind as well as tiredness of body, really. So I think they won't have been unawares that a drop in energy is inevitable. I think they just would have backed themselves to be in a better position to cope with it when it happened.
I know that they have one chance right at the end, but I think even with how intense it was and how difficult it was, right up until the very last minutes, I still fully believed that we were going to get one last goal. And I think the point is, so did every single Liverpool player on the pitch. Like, they're playing right until the very end of injury time, right to the last throw, and they're going, well, we're still in here, and
Part of why City get in is Liverpool have... there's a couple of times where City nearly get in, and when they actually do get in, part of why they've got in is because Liverpool have pushed so many men forward. Liverpool are fully committed, aren't they?
Fully committed to it. And I think that there was... I can't remember what the numbers of goals were that came up on the screen, but it was talking about after 76 minutes in a game, how many more goals Liverpool have scored this season than Man City. And it's because that's how it always feels, that we've got a little bit of a madness left in us, and we've got a little bit of something, one final flourish that'll make it happen. And it felt right until the end, for me anyway, like there was still hope and it could still be 3-2.
I know, I think that's absolutely there, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think 80 is interesting. The bits of it reminds me a little bit of the Stamford Bridge game earlier in the season, but I think 80 is interesting, Stu, in that suddenly I think we're then tired as well. And that's why I was thinking it's coming, and then we get to about 80 and I think they're quite good, they're better than us from 80 to 90, but I actually think we're better in injury time. And the ball comes up and it's almost like our lads go, all right, one last big push, but then that's ironically how they get in. And you know, it's a strange little way in which that, you know, the energy ebbs and flows, I think, in these games. And it's a real reminder, you know, you are watching the very best against one another because you see the ebb and flow. When both of these sides play against Man United, for instance, I bet they're shattered on 80, but they don't look it anymore, or they don't feel as though they need to be, because they can just look after the ball and manage it all the way out, and, you know, the two or three goals clear, so you never even notice. In games like this is when you notice what the physical exertions do to the players.
It's not just the physical as well, though, is it? Yeah. You know, the physical manifests itself because a lot of the time, because the mental as well. I mean, to be that switched on...
They start getting out to touch, which I thought was interesting. Rodri does a couple of switches, he just overhits them, and he's like, what's wrong with me here? I've been great for 75.
Just mentally fatigued, you know. I think you know, there is that element, and I agree, actually, it was a little bit in that last 20, a little bit, right, you know what, you have a 10 now because we're knackered. You know what I mean? And then on 80, you know, it went back the other way, and I do think that was the case. But I was, and the second half, and particularly the last half an hour, with the exception of maybe injury time, was probably the most calm I was during the entire game and the entire build-up. I really felt, even when they were dominating little patches again, I still felt, no, we've got this. We've got this. And that's why, to be honest, even though it stayed the way it was and, you know, we didn't sneak a winner, I still felt buoyed by the end of it. I still felt, all right, I'm sound with that now. Actually seeing how it's played out psychologically as well, more than anything. And seeing how desperate they were right at the end to still try and push to finish us off. They couldn't finish us off. They couldn't do it. No matter what they threw at us, they couldn't knock us down.
That then throws open, you know, I don't want to, we'll build up to next week's game, John, and any potential Champions League final. We'll build up to it, obviously, in more detail as it gets closer. There's a game against Benfica to come first. We will go on and talk about that. But it does throw open the idea we might play them twice more. Do you think we'll be looking at a couple of things being differently? You said before you think they played the hand. It's a brilliant hand. They'll keep playing that hand, I think, to an extent. I think the Cup semi-final could be really odd, not least because I've not really got a handle on the selection, likely selection patterns for both managers. It's possible that they think they can rest a couple in this, that if they're going to get an opportunity, because what they also now know, both of them, is we've got 7 league games to win. That, you know, the Cup semi-finals Saturday, we play Man United on the Tuesday night. They'll know that. Klopp obviously knows that. He can literally read a fixture list. He's not stupid. So they'll know what this is now going to be. And I think that's why I think the semi-final might be a really strange game of incredibly good football, if you know what I mean. I've got no handle on what it'll be as a football match at this point.
No, and it's a fair point, and I hadn't really considered that Man United game because, you know, I'm thinking about Benfica before then and how, you know, that is an opportunity to maybe to rest a couple. But then, as you know, you're better resting or playing, you know, in this scenario, really. It's a tough one, and it'll probably just judge it on a player by player basis, really, and the fact that, you know, even if our squad is great and massive, you know, you sort of end up having to pick a few of them at least. And so it'd be interesting to see how he approaches Wednesday. But then Saturday, I'd have no issues with them going same team again, because I think they'll do it better, and I say they'll have learnt and they'll have played again. So, you know, if I see the exact same team on Saturday, I'll be completely fine with it, because I don't think we need to necessarily solve the problems we had at the weekend with different personnel. I think it's just learning, and no one will have learned more than the lads who were on the pitch. That said, there is the game on Tuesday, and then there's also, I think both managers will have a bit of an element of, I wouldn't mind surprising the other one with something. And that's what both Guardiola and Klopp will be thinking about. Well, maybe I'll just throw something in, where an hour before they go, well, fucking hell, didn't think he was going to do that. Do you know what I mean? Or have we got a plan for him? Is he playing on that side or that side? Do you know what I mean? Something like that will really tempt both managers as well, especially if there is a Champions League final to come, because it's almost like you double bluff then, isn't it? Then you get to the Champions League final, and then everyone's like, oh, is he going to, you know, which one's he going to do, sort of thing. So I think with the long game, sort of, I think that both managers will be attempted just to throw one in there they weren't necessarily expecting, but who that is, I don't know.
I'm now weirdly looking forward to the semi-final more, Amelia, in that, sort of what Ashley was saying there, you've looked at it, you've been terrified by it, but it's almost like an inoculation. You're out the other side of it now. You know, you've gone through the whole process. This one's at Wembley. Listen, we might lose, but I'm actually just really looking forward to that game next Saturday. As you know, it's almost the nearest thing you get to Test cricket. This at the very highest level of football now. In that,
I'm going to Edgbaston.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing us test ourselves again against them. Them test themselves again against us, and that's just nice. For want of a better word, it's literally just nice to be coming out thinking, yeah, all right, we did that, out the other side of that, nothing's gone, nothing's over here, let's do it again next Saturday, lads, and let's see where the way it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, aside from the entire time feeling sick to my stomach, I did really enjoy it, because it was a brilliant game of football and we get to watch, like, how lucky are we? Like you said, we could have been watching Everton United, but instead we get to watch Liverpool versus Man City, and that's the quality of football that we get to enjoy every single week. And I do think that they've showed their hand, and by that I agree, and I think it also means they don't really haven't got anywhere else to go in the same way that Liverpool have. Obviously they can make changes and they can do things differently, but I think we've got a lot of different places that we can go, and we've got a lot of other things that we can throw at them, and we can surprise them in a way that I don't think they have the capacity to surprise us. They can be as brilliant as they were there, they can change the formula slightly, but it'll be largely the same, whereas we can do something entirely different, and I think that'll just wreck Pep's head if we do.
I love this idea that they've shown the hand, whereas I think we can and we will shuffle the deck. I think we've got five cards to play, and you know, we've got seven to play really, but you've got five real nailed on in the forward line who it's hard to pick between. And you know, I mentioned before, I would like to see Bobby play in the semi-final. I'd like to see him play against, I think he should be on the pitch when we play Manchester City. That, you know, that's...
You wondered about this, there was this rumour of a little injury or something in the build-up, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was supposedly didn't train Friday or Saturday.
So whether that was a factor in the minutes that he
may
got,
well be, and may many. Well that will mean that he does play in the semi-final. Yeah. I would very much like to see that. And I think Diaz is the joker in the pack, though. I'm going very heavy on the cards.
It's fine.
I started it.
But yeah, I think Diaz is another one. Wild card. Stop it, Jimmy. Stop it. I do think he is the one who could surprise them. To reflect on what you were saying before, John. I think he is the one that Manchester City might feel a little bit in the wide open spaces of Wembley. He might be something that they... And, you know, they've played against Liverpool so many times over the years. They know each other inside out. They don't know Diaz that much.
He scored against them, hasn't he?
He's got form against City, and they don't know him that well. And I think you've almost got to capitalise on that to an extent. I mean, we've seen that since January. He's been such a threat in the Premier League. He's been something different. The media, other fans, other teams, they're so used to what Liverpool's front three has been. And now there's something a little bit different, a little bit of different type of energy there. I would quite like to see him, whether it's from the bench or not, I'm not sure, but I would definitely, as I said, like to see Bobby on Saturday.
Okay, Benfica then, it becomes a bit of a sports science question, Stu, to an extent. It's a chance across two games, possibly to rest a few, there's five subs in play, but it's still a Champions League quarter-final. We don't want to dangle any hope in their general direction, I think it's fair to say. So I think he'll go pretty strong against Benfica, might make two or three changes and have his eye on making another four from the bench if Liverpool can put the game to bed early.
Yeah, I think he'll go pretty strong. I would there'd probably be two, maybe three positions I'd look at. Maybe I'd probably rest Matip, because I think you've still got to wrap him in cotton. Well, you've still got to look after him, haven't you? And Canate did. He had a mixed game, didn't he, the week? So, you know, he could potentially play him again. Or even Gomez at centre-half, you know, would that be the right time, actually? Maybe alongside Van Dijk in a game like this at home, we've got a little bit of a lead already. Maybe that's the right time to let him play in his more natural position. I would rest Mo against Benfica. I'd go very strong, but it'd probably be Mo, Thiago and Matip that I'd be looking to rest them. And as you say, you've got five subs, it's all in your hands.
Yeah, you're not talking wholesale changes for Benfica. I don't think I can't see him doing, you know, 11 and you know, and going like it's a, you know, an FA Cup game at Nottingham Forest or something like that. They were quite strong in that, I suppose, in the as well, but you know what I'm saying. I think Mo, the only thing is you might be thinking, well, I'd love to get him a goal. And so I think, but then you can give him 20 minutes at the end of the game and see if sort of happens there. You know, it is becoming a bit of a thing.
He's played so much football, John.
He has, but I just think, you know.
Actually, he played well yesterday, though. Because I think, like, for instance, at Watford, I didn't think he played well. I think, but like, he wasn't great in front of, and at Benfica, he wasn't great in front of goal, but he wasn't great at other things as well. Yeah. Yesterday, I think, he plays the great for Mane. I felt he actually just has a good game. He has a 7 or 8, if you know what I mean, for me, Salah yesterday. So that's why I think I probably would start Salah and have the idea of we're giving him an hour rather than anything else. That's, I would start him because I think the goal would help, but I think also just keeping him feeling like he's playing well would be no bad thing, I think.
He can't do 90.
No.
He can't do 90. You've got to...
Or 45. It's, you know, we've seen him do that before. If it's 2 or 3 nil Liverpool at half time, which it might be, the manager's well within his rights there then, I think, to go, okay, I'll do 2 or 3 at half time. Who else would you move along? Either of you, Emilia first.
But I was just going to say, I think you can have a bit more of a conversation with Mo about resting for Benfica than you could for a game like City. I think, like, there was some chat around whether or not he should be starting on City, and he absolutely should have been starting that fixture. Just, I think, the status of it and everything else around it, and also this idea of, yeah, it's becoming a bit of a thing, and City would have been the perfect place to put that to bed, because the kind of the narrative around it, it's not been quite working for him, and then he gets a goal at City, would have been absolutely incredible. But I think you could have a bit more of a chat with Mo about, I'm going to rest you for this one because I really need you for everything else. I don't think he will, and I do think that he needs to rest him for at least part of it. But I think you could almost have a bit more of a word with him around that and go, look, you're exhausted. You just need a bit of a rest.
Yeah, I think so. I think either decision sort of makes sense to me, and there's arguments sort of two or for and against. And I think as well at the back, I think we're going to see a bit of James Milner at some point. Yeah. So that might well be sort of Wednesday night.
Keita starting as well, sure. Yeah, yeah. He played so well.
Yeah, Keita will start. I think he might do Keita, Milner and play Henderson six and give Fabinho a bit of a rest. He may do, but you know that is sort of an option available to him. And you might see a bit of Tsimikas maybe as well. Although Andy Robertson doesn't look like he's desperate for a rest, but just sort of looking ahead and looking at what is ahead, really, he might do that.
Okay then, we all are as confident as you can be in a quarter final, second leg Champions League game we're going through.
Yeah, they'll win.
No nerves knocking around for that one. There were nerves yesterday, but it was the absolute business. It really was. It was a fantastic game of football. Use any card metaphor you like. You can absolutely fill your boots.
A full house.
You can absolutely fill your boots with any of them. Any of them that you want. But as far as I'm concerned, there are 21 points left to play for. 21. Can Liverpool get blackjack? See you later. Podcast Network.